Okay, good afternoon, everybody. The topic of the shiur today, as you can see, is Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam, contrast and comparison to the lenses of our sages. Now, I would just begin by saying that the topic, even though I came up with it, really bothers me. Because in the eyes of our sages, Bilam is considered a lowlife. What can I tell you? Okay, in other words, maybe when you look at the psukim, I would refer to Bilam. We're told by even in today's day and age, I think people have a very hard time with Bilam's behavior. According to Chazal, Bilam committed the act of bestiality with his own animal. And on the other hand, as we'll see, Chazal definitely compare Bilam to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who really, no Navi can be compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, Chazal compare Bilam to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the point of the shiur is to understand what that means and what the lesson for us today is. Before I begin, the parsha itself is a very difficult parsha. There are many difficult parts to the parsha. I'll just mention two. First, one of the most difficult points of the parsha, which maybe we don't think is so difficult because we grew up with this. It's like, you know, part of our upbringing is, you know, Bilam is walking along and all of a sudden, his animal starts talking to him, right? And like, Bilam, what does Bilam do? Bilam responds like it's very normal. But not only does Bilam respond like it's very normal, like when Bilam finally sees Balak, the Torah doesn't tell us that Bilam says to Balak, hey, you know, the craziest thing happened on the way here. Like, several people say, yeah, Bilam was insane, which could be. Bilam thought he was so great. I think we just accept it because that's what we were raised with. You know, as in all the Parsha storybooks that we grew up with, they had a picture of Bilam's son talking to Bilam. Okay. Another difficult question is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Bilam, go, and only what I say you should do. And on the way, all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at Bilam for going. And obviously, this is where the tone, Bilam's animal, you know, sort of has to step up and say something to him. The question is, like, well, there's obviously a symbolic meaning. There's a symbolic meaning behind a lot of the things that happened with Bilam on the way. But the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Bilam, you can go, and then on the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets upset, it's something that that we have to understand. So, hopefully, I'll try to explain that at the end of this year. Before I begin, one more point, I want to start from the last source, and this is source number 16. So Rashi, beginning in the Parsha, so Bilam was a Navi. Now we know in general, most of the Navi and most of the prophets of the Jewish people, if not all of them, they were on the highest level. If you look at the Rambam, what the Rambam lists as required to become a prophet, you have to be on the highest moral, intellectual level. And Bilam, we know, was certainly not on a high moral level. So Rashi points out, is in Nomar, V'neimah Hishra HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shechinato Ogoi Rasha. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu cause the Shechina to rest on a goy, a Gentile that was wicked? And it could be the reason why Bilam was chosen, because maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't find anybody, any righteous goy at that time, to be the Navi, to be the prophet, who had the same intellectual abilities as Bilam, and Bilam was chosen because of intellectual abilities, he was very smart. Kedei, Shelo Yehe Pischom Pelo Umos Lomar, Ilu hayu lanu neviim chazaru lemutav. If we had had neviim prophets, we would have returned to the proper path. We would have been good. We would have behaved properly. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hemid lam neviim, gave them prophets. And what happened? Because of the prophets, the hein partzu gider olam. So they, the neviim, they broke open the gates of the world, the gates that were there in order to keep the humanity within a certain activity, a certain behavior. Because before the prophet, before Bilam came, at least they controlled activities that were involved incest. And this one went ahead and gave them advice to be involved in incest and all sorts prosperity and other activities that were immoral. And it's fascinating. So if you look, at the end it talks about Bilam, but it says Behem parts of Gidrei Olam, which I would explain as the Umos Olam themselves. In other words, so part of the blame is not just on Bilam, part of the blame is on the Umos, the people also. I'd like to understand that. So now let's begin this year. So the Gemara of Bava Basra, a very famous Gemara. I mean, I'll explain later why I think it's famous. At least it's famous in my family, the Soloveitchik family. So the Gemara of Bava Basra, Daf Yudal Mabez, Daf Pesach Min Aleph, speaks about the Seder of Tanakh. How, you know, which Sefer, which book of the Bible comes first, who wrote each book. And the Gemara there says, in Daf Yudal Mabez, Umi Kosovan, who wrote the books of Tanakh, the Bible? So Gemara tells us Moshe Kosav Sifro. Moshe wrote his own book. He wrote the Torah. Now we know that the last 8 verses in the Torah, there's a whole dispute who wrote it. But in general, Moshe wrote the Torah. And then it says Parshas Bilam. He also wrote Parshas Bilam, which is our parsha reading this week in Eretz Yisrael, next week in Chutz Laretz, the Eov, and he wrote Sefer Eov. Not everyone agrees Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Sefer Eov, the book of Job, but Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Parshas Bilam. So all the Reforshim ask the question: Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah. So the Torah doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, you know, the whole Torah plus Parshas Noach. The Torah doesn't tell us Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah plus Parshas Pinchas. So why is the Torah specifying Parshas Bilam? So Rashi points out Parshas Bilam, Nevuoso Mesholov, he wrote down his prophecies and his parables. Avalti she'enam sorchei Moshe v'sorosav, even though they were not necessarily from Moshe in his Torah, the Seder Maisav, and the Seder Maisav, what he did. Okay, it wasn't necessary for Moshe, that's why he wrote it. But still it's part of the Torah. So the Ritva suggests, which is, many Rishonim suggest this, that really, what happened was is that there's the Torah, and when the Gemara says Moshe wrote Parshas Bilam, that's not referring to Parshas Balak. When the Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Parshas Bilam, that's referring to a separate book. For some reason, Moshe Rabbeinu felt the need to write everything down that happened to Bilam. Maybe once the Jews found out what happened, it was a very traumatic experience, and there was a lot of lessons for that generation to learn. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down Parshas Bilam. That's the Ritva's suggestion. He says, it's a Parsha by itself. Okay. And they, that generation, and maybe later on, they had that Sefer. We don't have that Sefer anymore. Alright, so he says like this. Now, Maral, in source number 4, Maral says, Moshe Kosav Sifro Parshas Bilam. So Gemara, Maral asks the same question, Vakasha, it's very difficult. Valo, isn't it true that Parshas Bilam, the Chlal Torah Moshe, the Parshas Bilam is included in the book of Moshe, the Torah of Moshe. He says, so what's the point? The point is that there are so many prophecies that Bilam gave that actually were relevant to Am Yisrael. For example, Bilam spoke about the Mashiach. It's fascinating, actually. So, and therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said he gave his stamp of approval. So the Gemara is telling us, according to the Maral, that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is even though Bilam, who was a non-Jew, went ahead and he prophesied this, he says, I agree with it. And therefore, he says, why? Because to show that this parsha was told to Bilam from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, and also to let us know, as we'll see, that Parshas Bilam is also called Torah. But to let us know that even though Bilam said this prophecy, so he says, even though, however, even though Bilam said this prophecy and it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu gave a stamp of approval. I'll just mention, you know, it's fascinating that when we talk about the Mashiach, so Bilam is one of the main prophets in the Torah. It's in the Torah about the Mashiach. There are other hints to the Mashiach, other places in the Torah. So the question is why? So there is a story that I think that one time, you know, we don't hear of this too often, but during the time of in Europe, 100 years or 200 years ago, from the time of, you know, Shabtai Tzvi, there were all these rumors that the Mashiach is coming, right? Because the Jews were suffering greatly, and all these rumors. Today, you only hear that Mekubal said in 30 days Mashiach is going to come. But he says, but in those days, so one time in Valashin, the rumor came to Valashin and said, Mashiach's here. So the police chief went over to Mr. Valashiner and said to him, is that true that Messiah has arrived? And Mr. Valashiner said to him, let me ask you a question. Do you believe the Messiah has arrived? And the police chief said, no. So Mr. Valashiner said to him, that if you don't believe the Messiah has arrived, the Messiah has not arrived. Because when the Messiah arrives, everyone will know it. And therefore, for that reason, Bilam was one of the people of God who spoke about the Messiah. Why? Because to let us know that when the Mashiach comes, even the non-Jews will be talking about it. But the Maharal says this was giving a stamp of approval. There's an interesting Yerushalmi, which I'm not going to focus on, but Yerushalmi says like this. If you look at source number 5, Moshe Kosav in the Sefer Sota, Moshe Kosav Kamisha Sifrei Torah, Moshe wrote the five Sifrei Torah, so he's probably the five books of the Torah, the Chazer Bekosev, and after he finished, according to the Mari upon him, so then he wrote Parshas Bilam. He says, for whatever reason, he left out Parshas Bilam, then he added Parshas Bilam in, and then he, Parshas Balak Bilam, and then he went and wrote Sefer Iyov. So for some reason, Moshe Rabbeinu decided to write Parshas Bilam afterwards, and maybe we'll try to explain why did he write Parshas Balak and Bilam afterwards, even though it was included in the Sefer Torah. So I'll just mention one more idea, and then we'll come into the main part of the shiur. Torah Chaim points out that when it says the Moshe Rabbeinu that wrote Parshas Bilam is referring not to the first few prophecies of Bilam in the Parsha, because that was very relevant to Klal Yisrael. All right? It's referring to the last part of the Parsha where Bilam was talking about what's going to happen to other nations of the world, and therefore you might think there was no purpose in Moshe to write it because it wasn't relevant to the Jews, but obviously in the end, it was relevant to the Jews, and we see that various prophets, Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, they also wrote prophecies about the other nations of the world. Okay, now, so one question we have to understand is why is it that the Gemara singles out Parshas Bilam? This is the question we've just been dealing with it. Why did the Torah say Moshe wrote his Sefer, Torah, and Parshas Bilam? Parshas Bilam is part of the Torah. That's one question. A second question, if you look at source number 8, says at the end of the Torah, the Lo Kam Navi Od Bi Yisrael Kam Moshe, Asher Yadu Hashem Panam Al Panam Hunu Moshe face to face. Moshe knew Hashem Baruch Hu face to face. So the Rosh, and this is comes from Chazal. The name before she mentioned this, the Lo Kam Navi Od Bi Yisrael Kam Moshe Amar Razal Yisrael Hu the Lo Kam. There was no prophet amongst the Jews who was like Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the Adon Neviim. But amongst the nations of the world come, there was, and who was that? Umanu and that's Bilam. Okay, so then the Medrash Tanoim, based on that, on this idea, quotes the differences between Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Medrash Tanoim said, what's the difference between Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu? So he says, Uvlo kam navi yod bi Yisrael, Uvlo kam, Yisrael lo kam, you didn't have a navi amongst the Jews who got up, I will come Uma Sa'olam, but amongst the nations of the world you have the Aza is that Bilam ben Ba'or. So the Gemara at the Medrash the Chazal, the rabbis asked, and what was the difference between the prophecy of Moshe and the prophecy of Bilam? So the Chazal tell us, the rabbis say, he says, when Bilam fell, spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was in a trance. And Bilam, he says, and Moshe was not in a trance. Right? Bilam knew when God would speak to him, and he was able to prepare himself. Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea. God could talk to Moshe anytime. And also Bilam knew what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to say to him, which is fascinating. So the Gemara gives an example. What's the example? So a king has a person in the kitchen that cooks. And a person, the king has an advisor. The advisor, when he gets called from the king, never knows what the king is going to ask him. But in general, the cook knows exactly, okay, the king's going to ask me, he wants this for dinner, I know exactly what he wants. Okay, that's the difference. So even though there were differences, and some of the differences seem to place Bilam on a high level than Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not true. He says, and Moshe Rabbeinu, he stood, and Moshe spoke to God, peh el peh, and face to face. Okay, so I want to explain the Gemara based on Rav Tzadok HaKohen. Now you would ask me, what am I doing quoting Rav Tzadok HaKohen? Okay, I have to tell you, the truth is, in general, I have a very hard time understanding Rav Tzadok. Some things I have understood, and I don't remember my father ever quoting Rav Tzadok. It could be he did. Kisvas, MS, Rav Levi Yitzchak, other Mephorshim, other Maimarim from the Gdolei Hasidus. However, what Rav Tzadok says here, the same idea, it with the small differences, nuances, was said by my great grandfather Rav Chaim Brisker. Okay? But Rav Chaim Brisker said it's not written down, it's al pi shmua, handed over generation to generation. And Rav Tzadok says is written down. So let's look at Rav Tzadok and then I'll speak to Rav Chaim. He says like this. He says, so he asked the same question, source number 11. This is in Brit Tzadok, this week's Parsha. Parsha's Balak. He says, why is it that Parsha's Bilam is specified, is singled out more than the rest of the Torah? He says, and you want to talk about stories in the Torah? What does the creation have to do with Am Yisrael, especially Parsha's Noach? What does it do anything? He says, and you want to talk about how about the whole story that happened with Hagar and Ishmael? Why is that relevant? Or what happened with Esau? Just with Esau? Why is it all relevant? See, he says so why? And then the next question is, why is it referred to? You can see it's involved as Parshas Bilam, and it's not referred to as Parshas Balak. Right, and the truth is, we see in the eyes of Chazal, this parsha is called Parshas Balak. Why? Because it talks about when Chazal were deciding which parsha should be said as part of Kriya Shema, they were thinking of imposing, obligating us to say Parshas Balak. Okay, in the end, they decided we should say Parshas, the parsha of the Shema that we say, not Parshas Balak. We see Chazal called Parshas Balak, Parshas Balak. However, here when the Torah singles out this Parsha and says Moshe wrote that Parsha, they refer to his Parsha's Bilam. Why do they do that? Okay, so he says like this. So he quotes this Chazal, the Chazal that says, "Lo kam Navi od b'Yisrael to Moshe, avu b'umos olam kam," and who is this? This is Bilam. Alright, why is that? So he says, it's interesting, what's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and other Leviim? So the other Nevi'im, whenever they prophesy, he says, Kol Mar Hashem, says, Moshe Rabbeinu, he was able to say, Hazeh HaDavar. He was able to say exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. He says, in other words, why is that? So Tzadok explains, because the Nevi'im, the prophets, when they said over a prophecy, they prophesied, they said, we heard this prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now we're telling it over to you, in, I guess, in our words, in a certain sense. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, it was ke'ilu, it was like the Shekhinah. God himself was talking from Moshe Rabbeinu's throat. The expression that he used is, az ha-Shekhinah medaberet mitoch korona. Alright? And it's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going ahead and is with his finger is sort of, you know, running everything. And really, it wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, it was like HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke. And that's why it says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Bilam, V'achas ha-davar sh'adavar elecha, so ta'aseh, only that thing I tell you, you should do. Only that thing. What Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, what Hashem was saying is, yes, it's going to be exactly, you're going to be like Moshe. You're going to say exactly what I say, not in your own words. He says, and therefore, he says, oh so, that's why he says, oh so ta'aseh. Not oh so ta'aseh, oh so ta'aseh. That you have to basically move your lips in a certain way, so it'll be like, in a certain sense, my voice is coming out of you, he says, my voice is coming out like the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and that's the, he says, and that if you look at toward the top of the second side, it's the bowl, Rak HaShechina, V'hu Ye'oseh Rak Nuos Motzos. Bilam just made the mouth movements, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking. And moving the mouth is an action. So he says, and then when the Malach spoke to Bilam, by the tone, he says, Ashir Adaber Alecha to Daber, okay, he says, what does that mean? That means whatever I tell you, you have to use those exact words. You shouldn't change anything I put in your mouth. He says, and that's what Bilam told Balak. You know, that's the idea. So he says, so what does that mean? So what that means is like this, that when did the Torah become Torah? For example, we have a whole sefer, we have Pesach Bereishis, from Parshas Bereishis until Moshe Rabbeinu was born, until Moshe Rabbeinu heard the word of Hashem. We don't know when that was. So was Parshas Vayetzeh that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, did that become Torah as soon as it happened? Or when Yaakov gave the brachos to his children, did that become Torah as soon as it happened? Or maybe when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, did that become Torah when it happened? When did it become Torah? So Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, that it became Torah when Moshe Rabbeinu said it. In other words, as we'll see a Gemara, the Gemara of Basra says, we'll see in a few minutes, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe what was said, and Moshe said it over himself, and then he wrote it down. So when did it all become Torah? Everything became Torah not at the time that it happened. It became Torah when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it down. And he says, if you look at the last paragraph, it's underlined. Ze inyan dechol haTorah kula gam haSipurim shem Sipurim yedei shenichtavu yedei Moshe nasu divrei Torah k'mo milah dahavar. All the stories, they became. He says, the fact that Moshe Ben wrote it down, they became the Torah then. He says, the Alzeh Amar Moshe Kosef Sifro, Shem Kula Bechlal. See, he says, became part of the Torah. So that's the idea. He says, so, and that's why it says Parshas Bilam. Why Parshas Bilam? Because Parshas Balak refers to everything. Parshas Bilam refers to the things that Bilam himself said. So you might think that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu at a certain level was talking out of Bilam's throat, which is hard to understand, I'll explain in a second how my great-grandfather explained it. He says that it was that Moshe didn't write it because it became Torah through Bilam. The answer is no. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote everything. For everything in the Torah. But he became Torah through Bilam. Now, Reb Chaim Brisker said the same thing. He asked the same question. He said, well, why does the Torah single out and designate Parshas Bilam? Just throw the parts of the Torah. See, he says the same idea that really that when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, it became Torah. When Bilam said the prophecies, it became Torah. Also, now you might think that Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam are the same. So, Reb Chaim Brisker said like this, using the lingo of his day, and then we'll transfer to our lingo. I think, I don't even know the lingo of the day. But he said that when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was medam mitoch ronosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there were also actions that Moshe Rabbeinu did, also. When Bilam spoke, he used the word, it was like a phonograph. It's like, Bilam turned on the phonograph, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically went ahead and you heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice. When I heard this from my father used the word phonograph because, you know, in the 70s, 80s, who used it? A record player, but I think in those days, it was a tape recorder, okay? Then the Dvar Torah changed, I think, to MP3s, okay? I'm not sure. Would they say it's MP3, MP3? They say something else. I'm not sure what they say. A voice WhatsApp, maybe, I guess. I have no idea. But he says, what made the prophecy of Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu unique was that Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam became Torah. It became Torah as they went ahead and said it over. Now, the question is why? We have to ask ourselves, why is it that Bilam merited such a thing? Did Bilam have to go ahead and did Bilam have to have this ability? Give them a prophet, like we had prophets. But that what Bilam said should become Torah? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did God give Bilam that ability? So in order to understand this, we have to see another idea from Reb Chaim. I actually copied, this is Reb Chaim al-Ashas. Now Reb Chaim al-Ashas, if you understand, I would just say, is very difficult to understand. Not because necessarily the ideas are difficult, just it wasn't written by his family. I don't know who it, maybe it was someone's notes. And that's why there are a lot of mistakes in the Reb Chaim. It's called the Grach al-Ashas, the stencil. However, here he asked a question like this. There's a Gemara, Maseches Bava Basra, and also Maseches Menachos, that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah. The question is, what happened to the last eight verses, the last eight psukim? Because the last eight psukim, Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead, and Moshe Rabbeinu had died already, by Yom HaShem Moshe. So how can you say that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the last eight psukim, the last eight verses? So Maseches Bava Basra, Maseches Menachos, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says, not a problem. Why isn't the problem? Because Yeshua Binun, he wrote the last eight verses. In other words, Moshe Ben wrote almost the whole Torah, and Yeshua Binun went ahead and he wrote the last eight verses. Now it's fascinating, that's his idea. It's fascinating, according to the Rambam's Haggadah characterization of what considers heresy, right? So that would be considered heresy, because according to the Rambam, someone believes that Moshe, not every pasuk, so he's a heretic. However, that was Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, and we see that not every member of Chazal accepted the Rambam Shita when it came to these things. However, Shimon says, how can that be? It can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu did not write the whole Torah, because he spoke about Sefer Torah Hazeh. So therefore, Shimon says, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, I want you to write this down. Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah. So, So Gemara explained, and Reb Chaim mentions two girsas. I'm just going to deal with one girsa just to understand the idea. So Reb Chaim says like this, what happened was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe the Torah, right? And Moshe wrote, and Moshe said, Mikan ve'eilet, from here on in. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the last day of Sukkot, and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, B'dema. What's going on? What's happening here? So Reb Chaim basically explains like this. He asks the question. We know that we have three parts of Tanakh, three parts of the Bible. We have the five books of Moshe, the five books of Moses, we have the prophets, and we have the Ksuvim. So the question is, we know that there's no question that the five books of Moses are on the highest level. However, are Ksuvim on a higher level than Nevi'im, than prophets? Or why should something be called Ksuvim and not the prophets? And if you want to tell me that the Nevi'im are on a higher level, Reb Chaim doesn't accept it. Why? Because Chazal referred to David HaMelech as a Navi. Okay? And we know David HaMelech wrote Sefer Dillon, which is in the Ksuvim. We know also that Shlomo HaMelech is a Navi, and he wrote also certain things. Yirmiyo was a Navi, and he wrote Sefer Recha, which is in the Ksuvim. So, and he said, and Reb Chaim says also, you should know there's no problem putting a Sefer Daniel on a Sefer Yeshayahu. It's all the same level. So what distinguishes the prophets from the Ksuvim? And Reb Chaim says like this, what distinguishes the prophets is like this, that what happened, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and gave the person the prophecy, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here's the prophecy, the prophet would say it over, and then he would write it down. Or the prophet would say it over on his own and then write it down afterwards. But Ksuvim, there HaKadosh Baruch Hu said something, was Ruach HaKodesh, the person who received it would write it down, and then when he gave it over to the Jewish people, he would read it mitoch haksav. Alright, that's the difference. Nebuah, they would say, not mitoch haksav, they would go ahead and say it on their own and then write it down, or as I'm before, they would say it on their own. And the prophets, they would go ahead and then the Ksuvim, they would write down first and only read mitoch haksav. And Reb Chaim says, and that's exactly what happened with the last day of Sukkot. The rest of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu said it over. He wrote it down. He said it over. But the last eight psukim, what happened was Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead, and Moshe Rabbeinu, when he said it over, Moshe Rabbeinu Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and he wrote it down, and he cried. Bedama, he cried because he saw the end of his life. He cried, but he didn't say it over. And he said it over or not? Maybe he didn't say it over, but he certainly said it over. Mitoch haksav itself, and that's why the Rambam said the last day psukim don't even require a minyan, okay? Because it's different than the rest of the Torah. So so what happened with Bilam? The same thing with Bilam. So is when just like when Moshe Rabbeinu said it over, that prophecy became part of the Torah. So Bilam also, it wasn't written down first. It was said over first, and once it was said over, it became part of the Torah. And the Gemara gives the example that when Yirmiyahu HaNavi had the inspiration for Sefer Eicha, so it was written down, and then from the Ksav, which is in the Ksuvim, it was said over. So, in other words, that's what made Parshas Bilam unique. That when Bilam said it over, it became Torah, because it's like Kadosh Baruch Hu was speaking from, in a certain sense, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, like a phonograph, a tape recorder, from his throat. Okay. Question is why? So, if we go back to the first Rashi that I mentioned, the Umos HaOlam, they wanted a prophet. Why did they want a prophet? They wanted a prophet because they said if we would have a prophet, then we would act properly. That prophet would bring us back to the way we're supposed to act and behave. And who would that prophet be? So they had to give a prophet that was like Moshe Rabbeinu. What did they want? They didn't want just a prophet. They didn't want someone like Yechezkel, like Yirmiyahu. They wanted a prophet that would say the Torah. What does the Torah mean? That what he would say, the Torah means how you're supposed to act. To tell you what the proper way for Gentiles to act is. That's the idea of the Torah. So therefore, in order to give the Umos HaOlam what they wanted, the Jewish people, he says, the Jewish people, the non-Jews had to have something which would basically go ahead and be Torah. If you look at source number 14, Otsim Medrashim. She says, this idea is a true idea. The Medrash itself might not be in its exact form, might not be the way it's given, but it says, Kisiv Hashem b'chachma yosed aretz, zu Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. B'chachma, found this is Torah. Torah zu, ana shama v'ana hoysa, lam nikra shma Torah. Why is it called Torah? B'nei sheyor da horola olam. Because the idea of the Torah is, and when the Torah came down, it told people to act. And what did the Umos HaOlam ask for? They didn't just want a prophet. The Umos HaOlam wanted something, wanted somebody that would give them hora, that would somehow or another be able, enable them to go ahead and teach them how to act. And also, this Torah that comes down had to be something that would be relevant for generations. The Gemara Masechet Megillah. So source number 13, Daf Yudal and Aleph, says like this. He says, "V'ksiva yishachad miramasayim sofim." He says, "To one of 200 sofim that prophesied for the Jews." So there were many more. There were. It sounds like there was over a million prophets. But which prophets written down? The prophecies that were needed for generations, and those prophecies that were not needed for generations, right? He says, so those prophecies would. Those prophecies were not written down. So, in other words, the non-Jews needed a prophet that relevant from generations. The non-Jews needed a prophet which would be similar to the Torah. What does it mean similar to the Torah? That the Torah would come down, the Torah would inspire people, and it would be Horah, would guide them, instructions how to act. So now, if we look, look at source number 15, a similar medrash to the Rashi saw at the very beginning. Uvavol Moshe olamor l'daber ito, tani v'lo kam navi od v'yisrael kamoshe, v'yisrael lo kam. Amongst the Jews, as we mentioned, there was no prophet like Moshe. Abu umas olam kam. Why? Kidei shelo yeh pishcha l'umas olamar, ilu hayu lo navi kamosha hayu avna kadosh baruch hu. They didn't want a navi, a stam navi like Rashi says. Chazal say they want a navi like Moshe. Ilu hayu lo navi kamosha hayu avna kadosh baruch hu. The eizen navi hayu lehem. Which navi did they have? That was Bilam ben Maor. In other words, you see, it wasn't a Navi, a prophet, any prophet, like Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Yeshayahu. They wanted a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu? I'll give you a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu. What does it mean, Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu? That this Navi, what he says, will be Torah. This Navi, that he says, will be Harah. And for that reason, Bilam was given this special schus, this special privilege, that, as the Tzaddik explains, and the Chaim explains, it was like when he spoke, it became the Torah. To understand, they had like Moshe Rabbeinu. They had like Moshe Rabbeinu. And what happened? So Rashi says, Hashem gave him a Navi, and the Haim hearts of Gedar Olam. They broke the gates of the world. What does it mean they broke the gates of the world? That somehow or another, Umas Olam, because of Bilam, went ahead and broke the gates of the world. So now we understand why Parshas Bilam is singled out. We understand the comparison between Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu. But now, just understand the last part. So, I think what you see here is like this. So, first of all, before we explain Rashi, I would just say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Jews leaders and gives the nations leaders. And the leaders are given according to the schus, the merit of the people, gives the merit of the people. And you know, we all have a tendency to go ahead and look back and say, well, you know, when I was younger, but every generation has the leaders that generation needs. Every generation has the leaders that generation needs. And the generation affects the leaders, as we know, when the Dor HaMidbar, Chazal tell us, very hard to understand, that after the Chedem Meraklim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't communicate in the same level of Moshe Rabbeinu until the whole Dor passed away. Why? Because the generation affects the leaders also. So, if Bilam HaRasha was such a Rasha, the reason why they had a leader like that is because they might have said, give us someone like Moshe Rabbeinu. But this was the leader that they deserved. The leader they deserved. And this was the leader that they deserved. And that's why it says, I believe, that Haim Parsu Gedar Ha'olam. It wasn't just Bilam that broke open the gates. It was the Umas Olam of that time themselves, because this is what they wanted. This is what they were looking for. And because of that, on the same level, they affected the leaders. And therefore, the fact that Bilam was able to give his advice, Bilam wasn't a tzaddik, he was a rasha. But he was affected by the generations. Therefore, Rashi uses the lashon, the haim parzo gedar olam. Not just Bilam, but the nations of the world also broke open the gates of the world. And this is the reason why. This is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu indicts the Umos Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a Torah. He gave them Moshe Rabbeinu, something like Moshe, and it had to be like the Torah, even to the extent that it was like HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke from the voice of Moshe Rabbeinu, but from Bilam's throat. However, the Umos Olam messed up, and so did Bilam. Now, why is relevant for us? I think it's relevant for us to realize and to look and understand that we also, on a certain level, and I refer to myself, affect the leaders and what the leaders say. What does that mean? So if you look at the leaders, there's no question that, you know, they're definitely affected. Sometimes because they have to be real and understand where people are at, right? So let's say for example, okay? I'll start off small. So, somebody told me that today, that, you know, let's say, you know, in the shidduch, right? You're looking, you know, boys are looking for certain things, right? It says, don't ask the boys
whether they go to Minyan every single morning.
Don't ask. You don't have to. It's okay if they sleep until 10 o'clock in the morning, 10:30 in the morning. Okay? I'm going to tell you. Again, I might sound like, you know, I remember when. Okay? I remember in the old days, when I was a kid, if you don't go to Minyan, you're Minyan, but it wasn't the right thing. Today, you can't expect. All right? And by the way, you should know, Rosh Hashivas are saying that. And maybe because of looking at reality. Okay? Another example, where leaders are affected by the people. I get a lot of shilas before Yom Kippur about fasting Yom Kippur. Okay? Now, I will not argue with a doctor. If a doctor says a person can't fast, I will not argue with a doctor. My father would argue with a doctor, by the way, sometimes. Okay? But I would not argue with a doctor. But I get shilas, you know, from people. So I say, well, what did the doctor say? Oh, I didn't ask the doctor. So I said, well, you know, there's no reason not to fast. If you think you shouldn't fast, you ask a doctor. Let me see what the doctor says. Someone told me, I'm not Zohar to be on Facebook, I have to tell you, but on Facebook you'll find all the complaints against the Torah, against the Chazal, all the complaints. So around Yom Kippur time, everyone's complaining about fasting Yom Kippur. Fasting Yom Kippur. Someone showed me a certain lady who was nursing because she fasted Yom Kippur, right? She wasn't able to come back to the way she nursed after Yom Kippur. I said, listen, I don't know what happened here, okay? But I've been a rabbi of a shul for 20 years, okay? I never had a lady tell me after Yom Kippur, I'm not able to nurse again. Okay? So, yes, sometimes things happen. But you can't go ahead and denigrate Chazal because something happened. What does that mean? The whole spirit in the ear is, you know, we can't cause people to go ahead and to fast Yom Kippur. We have to try to go ahead and we have to try to avoid it. And I know, you know, so, but I'm not saying to be machmir. I'm not a machmir. I have, believe it or not, I have mistor from my family, except for certain instances, to be makel. Okay? And those chumras are personal family chumras. But when something is usher, something is usher. And you see the generation going, bup, bup, bup. Okay? So I'll tell you a story of Yom Kippur. When I was, I think, 14 years old, a year after my bar mitzvah, I had a shiloh Yom Kippur. I wanted to do something. Okay, it did not involve eating or drinking. It involved, on the other hand, it was rechitza, it was sicha. I went to see my father. And I asked my father, Rishayla, I forgot what it was, maybe I didn't forget. And he said to me, it's awesome. And I said, but. I was not Maritz then, I'm Maritz now, but. And he says to me, it's awesome. And I said, but. My mother turns to me and says to me, Chaim, it's Yom Kippur. I remember in shul, you know, everyone fasted Yom Kippur because it was Yom Kippur, right? In other words, today we look, we see, we find, we're leaders affected by the generations to go ahead and to find leniencies, and you know we can go on and on. Unfortunately, it's a very painful topic. It's a very emotional topic. It's an explosive topic, okay? But there are certain things the Torah says is usher, and therefore it's usher. And there are leaders today. There are leaders today who are trying to find heterim, or trying to find, well, it's not so bad when the Torah, and I'm not going to get into specifics, Hamev and Yavin, those who want to understand will understand, those who don't understand will understand anyways, and if I get more specific, I'll get myself into trouble, so I'm not going to say. When the Torah says something is usher, it's usher. So why isn't the leaders, for altruistic reasons, are coming along and saying, well, this and that and this and that? In a certain sense, they are affected by the generation. They are affected by the generation. There's a way to be understanding, to be accepting. But the clear is that what the Torah says is usher, is definitely usher. And what happened? Bilam Harasha. You want to know what the lesson of Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam contrast and comparison applies to us? Because we could be guilty of the same thing. We could be guilty as a generation doing things to pressure the poskim, the leaders, to go a certain way. And it applies to all areas of Torah. It applies to, I can't tell you how many times I get a shiloh. How long do I have to wait
between Nochik.
Nochik and Pleshik and Nochik. How many times?
There's a small shayla.
Okay, so, you know, it seems the luckiest people in the world are people who are Dutch, because they can go in and they can have a
meal, okay? It's fine, it's all good, all
right? And maybe longer is chumra, right? So, you know, I find it, again, I don't know, I never looked at statistics, but I find it quite fascinating how many, the younger generation, they come to me, they say, we wait 3 hours, okay?
And by the way, she did 3 hours, okay?
But, like, when I was a kid, I remember it was so people, I don't know, there was one person in my yeshiva that I had and I was going to school with, kept 3 hours, I don't know, okay? A person called me up, he says to me, a nice guy, called me up, he says to me, he started giving me this whole introduction, he grew up, I'm Orthodox, and his grandfather wasn't so religious, and he came to yeshiva, and he's also struggling, and he starts telling me, father kept 6 hours in 1 hour. I said, okay, I didn't know where he was going, so what do you want? He says, I want to have there to go ahead and to wait an hour like the Dutch. Yeah. So I said, why? He says to me, because I need to have my coffee with milk after Cholent and Shabbos. Now I have to tell you that the last thing I would have after Cholent and Shabbos is coffee, because if I want to take a nap, all right? And I said, well, you know, I said to him, you know, you could use sometimes. I have a cup of coffee in the afternoon. I'll take soy milk or not even milk. No. I need regular milk. So I told him no, right? You know, my father used to have an expression.
An aguna shadow, and there are certain shadows that are agunas. But what we're trying to make is that the generation is heavy. We're trying to be poets, gidur sha'olam, in every year, everything mutter, right? And to that, and so what happened? That's what happened with Vilna Russia, with Umma Sha'olam. And I think that we, as a people, and I refer to myself, have to understand our approach has to always be, what's the halacha? Not to look for chumras, and not even to say, well, it's not fair. The Torah says, and this applies to every single halacha, from the most simplest halacha that we do every day to the most complicated and painful halacha. We have to be very, very careful. So Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam, contrast and comparison. What's the comparison? Comparison is very simple. Both of them said have the ability to make Torah, so that Umos Olam can go ahead and have a Torah for themselves to go on the path that's narrow. What's the contrast? The contrast is where they ended up. Moshe Rabbeinu understood the Dvar Hashem. Everything was very clear. Bilam tried to somehow or another maneuver around, and because there's Parut Gidur Shel Olam, we have to take the Torah Moshe Rabbeinu and make sure that we have the total unadulterated Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, a Torah that we're not Parut Gidur Shel Olam, and to understand, and we have to understand, not looking for chumras. Looking to what the Torah says it didn't say, and not to come to change things, but to understand what the Torah really means.
Yeah.